You are listening to No One Is Illegal Radio on CKLN 88.1 FM, Word of Mouth News. This is Yogi Acharya, and today in the studio, I'm joined by Craig Fortier and Marika Heinrich. We are coming to you live from the studios at Ryerson Student Center. This is Friday, December 18, 2009. In today's show, we focus on environmental justice, what it means and how it relates to issues of migrant justice and indigenous sovereignty.
We're on the verge of catastrophic climate change, and industrial countries such as Canada have been the leading emitters of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Even so, the immediate price of global warming is being paid by countries whose carbon contributions have been negligible compared to the industrialized world, including the outflow of numerous environmental refugees. Although many countries in the global south are reeling with the effects of this change, with droughts, famines, and severe climatic events such as torrential rains and storms become ever more frequent. Within Canada, the effects of climate change, environmental destruction, resource depletion, and its associated economic instability disproportionately affect Indigenous peoples, working people, poor people, migrants, communities of color, and women. Yet the solutions to the climate change fronted by mainstream environmentalists usually exclude these groups from their analysis. We discuss some of these issues today with our guest, Marika Heinrichs. Marika is an organizer with No One Is Illegal Toronto and a graduate student at York University. Among other issues, her work focuses on the need for decolonization and the dismantling of racism within the environmental movement. Welcome, Marika.
Thanks for having me.
Marika, could you start by talking about what climate justice or environmental justice means to you? And could you also tell us how you see this work being connected to issues of migrant justice?
Yeah, I think that environmental justice, the idea of environmental justice and how it emerged was through acknowledging that environmental problems affect people different people disproportionately. So some people are affected in their daily lives in very different ways based on environmental destruction. And we see this in terms of developing countries, but also within countries like Canada. And we hear a lot about how that exists in terms of Indigenous populations, and that's a really, really important part of environmental justice. But what we also need to think about and talk about are urban populations and people of color, women, low-income people, and how environmental issues affect them, and how the mainstream environmental movement often doesn't include the realities that certain people's lives don't connect with the solutions that the environmental movement are presenting for them. And so I think that climate justice is a in terms of how that connects to environmental justice, is acknowledging that climate change and the ways that it's going to happen is going to affect people differently depending on their levels of privilege. And we need to remember that when we talk about what combating climate change means. And I think that a lot of the way that climate justice is being taken up, and you know, we're hearing these words together a lot in the messaging coming out of Copenhagen and the environmental movement, and I think it's great that we're starting to talk about justice, but I think that we need to unpack that more and really ask where's the just in climate justice and what does that really mean? And in terms of connecting that to migrant justice, there are so many levels upon which you know, we can look at Canada's role and responsibility in climate change and our lack of taking responsibility, or the government's lack of taking responsibility, and how climate change is very much a symptom of neoliberalism and capitalism, just as the displacement of people and the enforcement of borders are also symptoms of that same system. So that's one of the many ways that they're connected. There's also the ways in which, you know, we talk about environmental refugees and climate refugees, and I think that's important language and important analysis as well, but I'm wary of separating the displacement of people based on climate change reasons or environmental reasons from other ways that people are displaced, because I think that those systems are connected. So that's a few of the ways that the issues are connected, I think.
So Marika, picking up on what you were discussing around Canada's role in terms of environmental destruction and the displacement of people, can you talk a bit more specifically about sort of how the Canadian government, as well as Canadian corporations, have a role in really, you know, providing the destruction end of the environmental destruction in the injustice end of in terms of climate justice?
Right. Well, I think that what we often don't realize is the corporation, Canadian corporations, and mining is a big one in Central America and Guatemala. There are a lot of mining companies that are responsible for pushing Indigenous people off of their lands. The same thing is happening with the Alberta tar sands, with other mining projects, with hydro, with logging in Canada. Grassy Narrows is another example of an Indigenous population that has been struggling to maintain access to their land and to stopping the logging of trees on their land. So these things are happening within Canada that the government is responsible for, as well as internationally. And those are often struggles that that are hidden that we don't see. So I think that's one of the issues.
Mm-hmm. And like as we see globally, as the climate is changing, we see the severe climactic events such as thunderstorms and famines become more and more frequent. It's becoming increasingly hard to deny the drastic effects climate change and just environmental destruction generally is having on people. But from the mainstream environmental movement, when we hear about solutions, what we usually hear is solutions in the form of personal lifestyle changes. So they tell us that we should maybe bike more, we should take fewer vacations, we should take shorter showers, or we should buy local food, and solutions like those. What is your take on these so-called solutions?
Well, I think this is an issue that comes up a lot, right, is between, you know, this idea that personal solutions are really empowering and important because it makes us feel like we can do something in our daily lives. And we don't want to take that away from people because it's important. It's true. These are huge problems, huge systems and structures that we're coming up against. And if we feel like we have no power to impact them, then that's a problem. At the same time, when we look at the ways that, you know, the Olympics is a great example of how this is happening. And a lot of the resistance coming out of the Olympics resistance is to saying no to the greenwash Olympics. And so we have, like, huge corporations like RBC, which are very, very much implicated in the tar sands, as well as other projects internationally that lead to the displacement of people, that lead to people needing to move and leave their homes because for various reasons they can't stay there anymore. So we see them, you know, sort of promoting the ways in which they are participating in a green Olympics. For example, yesterday in Nathan Phillips Square, when the torch was in Toronto, RBC had a van that was solar powered, right? And so this sends this image that they're concerned about the environment, and they're telling us, you know, buy these light bulbs or donate this money, or, you know, it's sending an image that is actually completely false when we look at what those companies are actually responsible for. And it's the same thing with messages that come from governments as well. I think when they promote individual solutions, that are based on buying things, so that are still dependent on a capitalist economic system, that's one of the problems. But also that it detracts from the fact that our government is not doing enough to stop this. We heard at the beginning of the show, you know, like, Canada is one of the slowest, laziest participants in this process. Our government is holding back the negotiations, and that is, we're beginning to be critiqued for that internationally, which I think is a really important message that's developing. But when you know, we have these a million acts of green and, like, campaigns like that, it makes it seem like it's all our individual responsibilities to change this. And when you look at the actual numbers of emissions and pollutants in terms of things that are contributing to climate change, the amount that come from individual acts are so minuscule in comparison to, like, industrial responsibility for waste and stuff like that. So I think it's a matter of feeling empowered to talk about the bigger issues and the system in place that is leading to this. And that doesn't mean that you don't still make personal choices and, like, you know, I bike and, like, I try to avoid buying certain things and certain products from certain companies. That's important. But when we only focus on that and we police each other about how we do it, that's really problematic because it's detracting our focus from the main issue. And, like, and finally, I would also like to say that a lot of the solutions that are presented are accessible to only a certain part of the population, right? Like, a lot of the time it's more expensive, it's only accessible in certain stores in certain areas. It's assuming that the value of, like, sustainability and being mindful about how much you consume isn't already implicit for certain people. And so I think, you know, that's a problem that the environmental movement's messaging has only really spoken to a certain group of people.
So Marika, I guess people may be wondering today, you know, today's International Migrants Day, and they may be listening to our radio show and saying, you know, it's International Migrants Day. Why this focus on climate justice, right? This focus on environmental justice. And coming out of yesterday's Block the Torch rally that took place in Toronto, but one of the things that was really, I think, well represented by the organizers of the event was this notion that, you know, Indigenous sovereignty, environmental justice, immigrant rights, anti-poverty issues are all interrelated. And I'm wondering if you can talk briefly about why it's important to link those issues, how they were linked yesterday at the Block the Torch rally, and maybe to sort of develop that, particularly considering when we talked, for instance, a couple weeks ago with Sean Brandt, he talked about the need for economic disruption as a serious tactic that may offend a lot of people, as I think that rally did yesterday, mm-hmm. but that was vital in making a stand.
Absolutely, yeah. Yesterday was amazing. It was really powerful to be in a space where all those issues were connected, and I think that certainly the economy is a place where they all come together. You know, we were talking about the Olympics, and what the Olympics have come to symbolize for a lot of groups resisting them is capitalism, corporate greed, and like, so when we look at Indigenous sovereignty or migrant justice, anti-poverty organizing, those are all places where people are affected differently, but are affected negatively by those systems and corporations. And what has happened in terms of the Olympics is the building and feeding into this system and idea of what Canada is and what our country means. And the reality is that so many people face such a different reality in their day-to-day lives. And so in Vancouver, I mean, the Olympics mean, in terms of the economic aspects, displacing people within the city from their homes, from access to services. It means using migrant labor to construct the cities or villages or whatever that they're building there for the athletes to live in. And it means the process of completely wiping out that reality when we see the repression that has come out of the Olympics and the repression of free speech. And I think that it also, in terms of the environmental destruction that's connected to the Olympics, but then also to the corporate sponsors that are part of the Olympics, like RBC and the tar sands, and then the Indigenous populations that are displaced, as well as the migrant labor that goes into the tar sands. So these issues are all get linked through the economic system. They also get linked through. Another way that I see them being connected is the way in which they are all alternative stories about what Canada is. And so we're told this very powerful myth about Canada, that it's this land where we have this amazing relationship with our indigenous people, that it's multicultural, that people come here and have equal opportunities. And the reality is that that is becoming less and less true, and that it never really was true. So Canada was built off of the labor of people who came here from other parts of the world, people of color. It was built not through a peaceful relationship with the Indigenous people, but through a process of colonization. Yes, Canada has a history of colonization. We continue to live in that context. And we are creating more and more, you know, the immigration changes that we're seeing coming up in January are creating a permanent temporary workforce, where we're going to have a pool of people that can come here and never really be able to stay, never be able to build homes or communities, mm-hmm. never be able to develop or benefit from, you know, the country that they will have invested their time and labor and energy in, never be able to benefit from that. A lot of the time, the reasons that they're coming here in the first place is because they're being pushed out of opportunities to stay in the countries that they're from, often because of a global economic system that Canada is a part of and benefits from. So I think these things are really all very interconnected systematically. There are also issues of land and borders and how Canada is further militarizing and closing our borders to people, and yet capital is able to flow more and more freely. I think that we need to start talking about different stories about what Canada is and what's going on here right now, because the legacy of colonialism and the exploitation of migrant labor continues. And so what stories are we going to start telling now? And I think that's really where I see these issues connecting, especially on a day like today.
Yeah, that's really great, Marika. And especially when we hear a lot of talk about Canada not meeting its climate commitments, its carbon emissions commitments. What doesn't get talked about enough, I think, is something you mentioned about how Canada, at the same time as displacing people around the world, is closing off its borders. It's implementing programs that are going to cut refugee quotas in half, mm-hmm. and it's going to drastically change the temporary foreign worker program. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely. Marika, thank you so much for sparing some of your time and coming and speaking with us today, and thank you so much for your work.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you are listening to No One is Illegal Toronto Radio on CKLN 88.1 FM. Just one quick announcement. Just like the announcers at the Word of Mouth News, we want to make a shout out to people to go out to the Toronto Women's Bookstore, purchase books if you can, donate if you can, but support that really important organization who's done so much for migrant justice in the city. So OCAP Radio is up next. Tune in next in 2 weeks' time for the June 2010 Resistance 2010 show on No One is Illegal Radio.
possible. You bump the